We are now joining our discourse with the continued reading of the Satipatthana Sutta.
He knows with understanding, I have agitation and worry. Or when agitation and worry are not present, he knows with understanding, I have no agitation and worry. He understands how the arising of non-arisen agitation and worry comes to be. He understands how the abandoning of the arisen agitation and worry comes to be. And he understands how the non-arising in the future of the abandoned agitation and worry comes to be.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll continue on here. When doubt is present, he knows with understanding, I have doubt. Or when doubt is not present, he knows with understanding, I have no doubt. He understands how the arising of non-arisen doubt comes to be. He understands how the abandoning of the arisen doubt comes to be. And he understands how the non-arising in the future of the abandoned doubt comes to be. Thus he lives contemplating mental object in mental objects internally, or he lives contemplating mental object in mental objects externally, or he lives contemplating mental object in mental objects internally and externally. He lives contemplating origination things in mental objects, or he lives contemplating dissolution things in mental objects. Or he lives contemplating origination and dissolution things in mental objects. Or his mind is established with the thought, mental objects exist to the extent necessary for just knowledge and remembrance, and he lives independent and clings to not in the world. Thus indeed, O bhikkhus, a bhikkhu lives contemplating mental objects in mental objects of the five hindrances. Okay, so what is the first thing? How can I ask this question? Do you notice anything about when you're doing the reading? Do you notice any sensation, any perception you have? Is it difficult to do the reading? Or is it easy to do the reading? Is there a rhythm to the reading? Is there a repetitiveness that seems you get into a certain timing and pacing with the reading?
Yeah, it's not easy, but it's very soothing somehow. It's like a chant, it's like a prayer, an offering of some sort to the text itself. I'm very taken by it.
Okay.
Especially after, you know, a few experiences.
Right. Okay.
In these last 2 months.
Okay. Anyone else want to make a comment?
I don't think it's easy to understand for me, but the repetition of the similar of every paragraph, it's comforting, the repetition.
Okay.
There's a cadence and a rhythm to the language and a repetition such that if you lose sense of what you're reading, I move to emptiness. Because if I really stop and have to think about it and analyze what's being said, I can't read it with the right rhythm and cadence. So for me, it takes you to a mind of emptiness and being.
Oh.
Just being.
Excellent observation. Anyone else? Thoughts?
Almost like you're just sitting and meditating.
Okay. That's good. That's very good. Anybody else? Greg, any thoughts?
It seems similar to other things that we've read. It's almost like a similar song with other words or focuses interchanged into it. So it's a little familiar, but the focus has changed.
Okay. So I'm going to throw out a concept for you to consider, and a word that you've all I'm sure have all familiar with, the word mantra. You've all heard the word mantra. What you are all describing is actually a mantra. So last week we spoke very briefly. We touched upon tantra, the word tantra, remember? Mm-hmm. And I mentioned to you the meaning of the word tantra is the use of the physical world to transcend and penetrate the absolute reality that exists behind the impression of the physical world, which is in our senses. That's what tantra means. And among those practices, there are one of the practices called mantra, which is chanting. So using chanting or sound and rhythm and cadence to take us to a place like James described of emptiness or being, or Sam described as almost like sitting in meditation without thinking you're doing meditation, or both Quinn and Johnny described discomfort, this feeling of soothingness, or what you said, Greg, also this sense of familiarity, that it's kind of like rocking a baby in a cradle. The actual reading, we start to feel like we're being rocked. And if we try to analyze too much into the words, as James brought, that's a very good point. We tend to break that cadence. Whereas if we read with it, suddenly the repetition becomes like a wheel, a flow, right? Like a chariot or a wagon moving along a road. And our mind starts to get into this process. And so the process of mantra is such that it allows us to move to this other state through the physical practice of sound and cadence and expression. Okay, so that's, you all picked that up. That's great. That's fantastic. Now, we have two things here. So far, we've talked about in the Satipatthana Sutra, the first part is contemplating the body, right? The physical body. Then we went to contemplating feelings. Now we start to contemplate consciousness in section 3, and then contemplation of mental objects in section 4. As I mentioned in some of the earlier discourses, many of the different translations use different terms. So some will call mental objects, some will call mental formations, some will say feelings, some will say perception. But in using these terms, based on the segment 3 that we read, what do you think he's referring to when he's referring to consciousness, when we put it in the context of the body, feelings, consciousness, and mental objects, they call it, or that's mental parks? What is consciousness then? What is he here speaking of? What do you think? Anybody, it's an open forum.
For me, it's a progression.
Okay.
And it's bringing to consciousness in the moment of the mantra of that, let's say, consciousness of those elements or objects, whatever you want to call them, it doesn't matter. And in the cadence of the mantra, it's letting go. It's a progression towards emptiness. It takes you to mental objects. It takes you to mental consciousness. It talks about the sensate world of sort. You're aware of it, and then you let it go. And it's all a progression towards, for me, towards a state of being that is empty.
Okay, James, so what do you think when he says, how does a bhikkhu live contemplating consciousness in consciousness? And here, O bhikkhu, as a bhikkhu understands the consciousness with lust as with lust, or the consciousness without lust as without lust, or later it goes consciousness as a shrunken state of consciousness, or the shrunken state, or the distracted state of consciousness in consciousness. What do you think that question is? What is that act of contemplating consciousness in consciousness?
It's awareness.
Okay, so how would you say that differs from mental objects? Because there are two different sections here, so there's a different emphasis. Anybody can check in. I'm just starting this conversation.
I look at it as kind of dissecting how we hold the world in mental construct.
Okay. Okay.
And we hold it in the sensate world. We hold it in the material object world. We hold it in mental consciousness, right?
Okay.
And it's the filter through which we perceive things and people and nature around us.
Okay. So what would be the difference between mental objects and consciousness? Why would he separate that into two segments?
For me, mental objects is mentally observing, I don't want to say physical objects, but something that can be defined
Okay.
In a shape or in a, it has dimension, let's just say.
Okay, and consciousness?
In shape and form. And consciousness is ethereal.
Okay.
It can go anywhere.
Okay. That is touching what's implied here in a from a slightly different position, which I may get to in a moment. Let's hear other people's thoughts on that. Consciousness versus mental objects. There's no right or wrong here. It's what you think, what you understand.
For me, the consciousness would be the mindfulness.
Okay.
The awareness of what I'm feeling at that moment.
Okay.
Having nothing to do with mental objects, but more emotional.
Okay. Remember, we have physical body, we have feelings, we have consciousness, and we have mental objects. I'm just working within the structure of the sutra now. So. Mm-hmm. So how do you put those all together in this description? There's a reason I want to go this way, because I'm going to share with how the Buddha is presenting his understanding of how we function. Okay, so go ahead, anybody? There's no wrong answer.
I don't know, I just think consciousness is just meditation, just aware of, let's say you meditate and you were aware of a noise and you're aware of it, but you just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But the mental object is more on analyzing
mm-hmm.
of the outside mm-hmm. world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, for me, it's that the key difference.
The mental objects for me aren't too, are the clinging. That's where, you know, I think of the clinging of.
Okay, in fact, after the five hindrances, the second number two is the five aggregates of clinging.
Oh.
So that actually, we get into that. Other thoughts? I'd like to throw out there to perhaps consider in terms of a construct. Is one a construct and one, obviously, they're both ideas we're using and words that we're using to describe a situation. So in that sense, they're linguistic constructs. But if we look at the word consciousness and we look at the word mental objects, and we think in terms of construct, something that's constructed, which seems more like it's constructed? Does one seem more constructed, or are they both, none of them seem constructed? Both Sam and James both touched upon this when they actually expressed.
I think they can both be constructed.
They can both be constructed.
It's up to you, it's very subjective.
It is subjective, but in looking at how it's written, mm-hmm. do we have a sense that one is more constructed than the other? Like if we review the contemplation of consciousness and he goes into the subject, understands consciousness with lust, without lust, with hate, without hate, with ignorance, without ignorance, with shrunken state of consciousness. That's an interesting term, shrunken consciousness. We'll talk about that in a moment. As a shrunken state or distracted state of consciousness, a distracted state. And then if we go to the next one, the mental objects, we go, I have sensuality or not sensuality. He goes, I have anger or I don't have anger. There's no anger present. I have sloth and torpor, which by the way means being lazy and not wanting to do anything, just hanging around. Or I don't have sloth and torpor. Or I have worry or agitation, et cetera, et cetera. Using the words that are here, does it sound like one of these concepts, consciousness or mental objects, we have more control over than the other in the description here as it's written?
Hmm. Well, it I guess it depends on how mindful we are.
That's exactly, you use the term mindful and James used the word awareness, which is, I'm putting in a parallelism here. That is exactly the point I wanted to point out to you. Okay, in consciousness, consider this. You don't have to, obviously you never have to accept my point of view. It's just a point of view. Consciousness here is referring to something that arises in us automatically. It's something, and in fact, when people are talking about the other issues of how sometimes when they define these terms differently, feeling or consciousness is sometimes described as perception. They use the word perception instead of consciousness, because consciousness here is really more described as something that you have an object, that's a physical object, then you have a sense faculty, and then the sense faculty perceives the object. And that's what the consciousness is referring to here, which is something that still, in the Buddhist point, the Buddha, of course, it's very amoebic, I would like to call it, amorphous and very subjective, as James said. But in general, it's referring to that process is pretty much an autonomic process, like our autonomic nervous system. There's an object, we have a sense object, say eyes, a screen, zoom, and there's sound and vision, and we perceive it. But and at that point, still, the perception has no value. It's just a perception, a consciousness. Then I have to construct, oh, there's Gregory, there's Sam, there's James, there's Johnny, there's Quinn, there's Masha, there's Zoom, there's this microphone. My head puts together a mental structure, a construction. And that construction suddenly becomes a value system. And now the interaction between the object, the sense faculty, and the consciousness that connects it suddenly becomes a value that I absorb that can become anger, it can become frustration, it can become I choose to check out and be ignorant. And so the mental construct is now at the point where I do have a certain ability to be aware of how I am building the reality around me.